to do something like this, which is have a discussion about choice, which some people call free choice or free will. That is what I want to do. Why do I want to do this? Because we are studying this subject of how to become a better, good human being, known as ethics, for some reason. You know the reason?
Why it's called ethics?
Mm-hmm. You don't know? Okay, I don't know either. So the class is not going to be about that.
Like the etymology of the word ethics, or why becoming a better person is put under the same label as ethics?
Well, that's the other way around, right? Aristotle has a psychological theory about the etymology of ethics. I thought you would know it.
Oh, no.
Okay. Okay, so I guess not. In any case, this is what we're studying. Now, one of the important points to understand the kind, the style of ethics that we're trying to do, right? Is that it's about a specific, there's a specific focus on this word human, right? It's very important. We could like list 13 different ways in which this makes a difference for what ethics is, but the description of ethics that we're working from is, and not only we're working from, the description of ethics that the entire tradition of ethics until last week is working from, including every shit that they've ever heard of, even the, notwithstanding the great debates between them, has its definition as what is good for, or the good of, a human being. Or we could say the human, a human kind of good. Human kind of good. Right? This works within a very general theory of what good means. Good is the perfection of a thing. Right? For anything, to talk about what is good is to talk about how it is good or what is good for it. Although that formulation is a little tricky because it might mean what you think is good. But what is really good for it, right? The good, that's why I say the good of it instead of what is good for it. But anyways, yeah, you understand the difference? But anyways, if good is always good of something, perfect, which we could call perfection of something, the way in which that thing is most fully that thing, or the best version of that thing, the ideal version of that thing, then it follows obviously that the human good, which let's say we call this ethics, study of the human good, although that's not what the word ethics, that's what it means, but we could get back to that if you want, is the study of the human good. Make sense? What this does for one is it makes life easier for us. No, make life easier. It makes the discussion clearer for us, right? Because, number one, many of the discussions of how to live, of how is a good way for human beings to live, especially the ones we're used to, which is why the way in which this it's useful for us, this start from something beyond or other than the human good, other than what is good for humans. Very often, people will say things like, what is good? What is the good life about, according to Yiddishkeit? What do people usually say?
Mitzvahs.
To serve God, to do mitzvahs, to do God's will. Okay, and what's that got to do with me? usually it often leads people to
Oyved Hashem is a good
to serve God. So what is good for me is that I should be good for someone else, for something else. I mean, that's maybe the good of a certain relation that I have, right? Someone could say, like, a good child is one who serves his parents correctly. A good slave is one who serves his master correctly. But that is not as long, assuming that the slave is a human being, has some existence besides for his slavery, that can't exhaust everything that it's good about, can be good about him. So if a human being is something besides serving God, which maybe people will deny, but assuming that there's such a thing as a human being, then serving something greater than you might be a good thing, because you have a relation to God, you have some kind of relation to things greater than you. And the correct way, the perfection of that relation, is to serve God correctly. Very nice. But that's not everything that there is to be a good human being, if that makes sense. That's one kind of mistake. There would be answers to this. I'm not here to say that you shouldn't serve God. I'm just saying that this is...
Can't be like the final definition of what it offers.
If we agree to this seemingly very clear and basic understanding of what good is, then you can't stay there. You can just disagree with that. You can just not buy that.
Or disagree with what a human is. To say that is, you know...
That human doesn't exist.
Yeah.
God didn't create anything. When it says Netayr Nas Adam, that's a lie. He just created a relation to himself. People say this. I'm not.
Yeah.
Just like it's Yeah, you could say that. I'm just clarifying what that would entail.
Right.
You could say that. Not saying you can't say that. It also leads to a chase after kinds of good which are not human. So another thing, and this has to do with the previous point, when people say, okay, whoever told you that you're here for your perfection? Like that's what a Litvak says, right? Chassidish worships God. I've heard this literal drusha from Chassidish people.
The
Litvaks are after their own perfection, like the Rambam. That's geshus,
right?
Yeah. That's selfish. But Chassidim are about serving God. So they're about someone else's perfection or something. Are they perfecting
they're into
God?
The bench's perfection also.
What?
They're into the bench's perfection also.
The benches?
The bench, yeah. Well, so if you want to buy a bench, I'll say, oh, do we need to perfect the bench?
A Litvish person?
No, Chabaskar. I don't Chassidim or Chabaskar.
They need a perfect bench?
No, they need to perfect the bench. They also perfect benches.
It's the opposite. We're saying that the Chabaskars don't perfect people. They only serve
no,
God.
No, they perfect everything else. That's it. Except themselves. I'm sorry, I really heard this. You're selfish. We learn on the bench and then make the bench something.
I get that. I get that. Yeah. But I don't see how that's...
Yeah, I heard it in this context.
I feel like that's... Okay. Let's try
I'm
to...
Sure, yeah, I'm yeah. not getting into if you can perfect the bench by sitting in and learning. I'm trying to say is that their idea is to like basically do everything...
Non-selfishness. Okay, this is not a class about selfishness. But the important thing that I'm saying is... What?
You should have one.
Another sheet. Now, where is going to be a sheet about... This is going to be a sheet about choice. This whole Shtikl Torah is a kedama to explain why I care about choice in this context. And if we won't get to it, I mean, it's... Yeah, you could all come in. It's... hi, hello. Ah, hello, welcome. Is Ari coming? We're going to get more chairs if he comes. Okay, sit down. Don't worry. Shalom Aleichem. We're saying that we're looking for the human kind of perfection, or the human good, which is the imperfection. Some other people are looking, just don't think in that those terms, and they think about some beyond human, high, greater than human perfection. Sometimes called serving God, which is, as we said first, really the perfection of the relation you have with what is greater than you, which is something, but not everything. And then we said that that also sometimes leads to, I wonder why, but it leads to, or it's connected with, another kind of beyond human perfection, where, let's try it out by saying like this. If the entirety of the human good is exhausted by serving God, that seems to mean that most of the kinds of perfections that humans have or care about are not real, right? Because we said perfection is of the thing. Those things are not real. What is real is whatever pertains to this relationship with what is beyond you, with what is greater than you. And that means that the kinds of things that you're going to be trying to do, or the kinds of perfections, you're assuming that you are still, because this logic of looking for perfection is still there always, assuming that you're still trying to be something, to be some kind of person, the kind of person you're going to be trying to be, or you're going to want to become, is the kind that is entirely in beyond human, right? Something like you would want to be fully ascetic or fully disconnected with things of this world, things of the mundane, right? Mundane is just Latin for world anyways. Worldly things.
Because you're looking to perfect not what you
because,
are.
Because, right, because you're looking to get away from what you are, what you seem to be, what most people will tell you are, to towards something very beyond that. So we talk about like very heroic perfections or very like mysterious nefesh becomes the basic value. Mysterious nefesh, and this is a correct description of Chabad theology, for example. Mysterious nefesh in the, as a term for killing yourself, or not literally killing yourself, but destroying what you are in service of something greater. Right? Mesirut nefesh, literally, becomes a very basic formulation for this kind of work, for this kind of life. Does these things make sense? It can be argued with, because my connection between these two kinds of ways of going beyond the human good are not entirely accurate. There's correct ways of saying all of this, right? Just to be very clear, unlike or somewhat unlike what Chabad would have you think, the reason, for example, the reason people like the Tanya even have the concept of a divine soul as a basic concept in their theory of what it is to be a good human being is only because they're really working within the framework that says that the good is the good of you, of something. And if their good is something very exalted, very high, they need to make the you something very high, very exalted. Otherwise, you could have just said...
So that it's relevant?
What?
So that it's at all relevant?
So that it's a good thing for you.
All right, so it's relevant to you.
Yeah, the word relevant is funny, but yeah.
What this word... They're trying to make the beyond you part of you?
Yeah. It entails that, really. Because there isn't really a way to make... I mean, there is a way, but it's in some way going to become part of you. Like we say, your relation to something is still you, or yours in some sense. We could argue about who the relation belongs to. A relation to something that doesn't belong to anything. It's like, who does the fatherhood of the father or the sonhood of the son belong to? Is it more on the part of the father or more on the part of the son? That depends if you're a Platonist or a Aristotelian. But in any case, that's just fancy words for people to think that I'm smart. But you need to have something like that being what you are in order for you to be able to even talk about this, be able to do this, for it to be good for you. Otherwise, and I've met actually other people who said didn't understand this. I said, okay, why do we need to talk about someone having a divine soul and actually kiss? Why just tell you I have to do this and this and this? Because there's no such thing as you have to do. You have to do what you are. You have to perfect what you are. This is accepted by everyone, including the Tanya. Therefore, when the Tanya talks about bittul, about giving away what you are, that's not a really coherent theory. It's something. It's more of an aspirational thing. I don't think it's a really. I don't think technically, scientifically, what he thinks or is thinking of is really that. Yeah. I think 100%. I don't think it's going away from this. I think that we need that. I think everyone is based on this. Okay. Now, but the more important thing is that there's this would be a kind of beyond human perfection, a kind of beyond human aspiration. And for that reason, in some sense, or you could say it entails becoming God, or whatever the source, whatever the higher thing that humans are, becoming an angel or something like that. And if what we're interested in is the human kind of good, then that's not what we're interested in. You could, of course, be interested in that. You could say, and Aristotle even says this when he gets to the next level. Aristotle says this, humans are not the best thing. So if you're looking for the best thing, then the human kind of good is not what you should be after. And if with the way he speaks about it is speaking of knowledge. Knowledge is about knowing the best things. Knowing what is good for people is not the best knowledge. Therefore, knowledge of the human good is not the best knowledge. Therefore, everything pertaining to humans is not the best thing. And what a really good person or someone that has really good knowledge wants to know is the fine things. That is the step towards the what we call in Aristotle language or the Rambam language, the intellectual perfection of the human being. Intellectual perfection of the human being is still considered to be, you could consider it
it's
to be...
It's not perfecting what's human about you.
It's something in something that touches the space between these two things. It's perfecting what is, we could sometimes say this is what's truly human about you in some weird way, but it's perfecting, you could say what is divine in you or what is potentially divine or what is truly human, things like that. Not what is human in normal speak, in normal people's language. There's a big difference between when we say that and we say this.
We tend to think animals live according to nature and humans don't necessarily live according to nature. And how is that possible? Because they have the intellect. So we think the intellect is something separate from nature. You know, we drive cars, you know, that's because of the intellect. Yeah.
Humans are, in this paradigm, humans are not... humans have a kind of nature whose perfection works in very much more complex ways than animals. One of them known as intellect. But in a very basic sense, it's not like, I don't think this like dichotomy of nature versus intellect where it really works. It's more that the question is what kind of nature you have. An animal can be perfect and non-perfect. A human can be non-perfect and non-perfect. And these are different criteria for what they are based on what they are. An animal, to be a perfect animal, doesn't need to drive a car. A human being might need to drive a car not to be a perfect human being. Different discussion if he does or don't.
So is a car a part of nature?
Yeah.
Because the human had the potential to develop it.
Mm-hmm. We had a class about this. There's one of the first class in this series was describing how technology is a natural thing. Yeah. In the very broad sense of nature. Yeah. Society is natural, according to Aristotle, right? City, a human is meant for a city. A human is a city, natural, and different technology is also natural. It's the human nature to use tools and to build up all these elaborate systems and so on. So this is the important because...
But it's unnatural in the sense that it derives its purpose from not from itself, right?
Taken by itself, a car doesn't have is an artificial thing, it's an artifact. Meaning it's created for someone else. It's a real slave. It doesn't have... It's good lives is in someone else, or it's for... It's really serving something else. But a human being or all natural things have some kind of standard of their own good in themselves or somehow.
I interpret, it's a das tevera, right? I think, human creativity is that they have a is and an ought divide, you know? Like, that... animal like may suffer, but it doesn't think of a new possibility. You know, goes along with it, or it goes.
Okay, wait. We're gonna get to all of this a little bit. I have to try to get to move on forward according to my plan. So I'm not going to argue with that, but I'll get to something about this in a little bit. I don't like the is-ought distinction precisely because of this, because that's also how human... This is just, we'll try to get to something more useful than that for right now. So that's just one way in which striving for something or looking for something beyond human is a very good thing. And the way this is a beginning of a solution for a lot of problems that you might have had, including in the Rambam and including in life and so on. But we're primarily interested in human... good, which is known as ethics or character. Ethics is just character. And precisely the kind of character which is human, the part of you that is most human about you. Okay, that's the thing that we're talking about. There might be goodness, that's what I'm saying. It's important to remember that there is goodness beyond this. And in a certain sense, and I'm going to just make a sentence of this and move on past that, because that would be like a whole series of classes. And if you listen to my classes with Antonio Vargas, you'll learn 500 different pilpilim about this. But the main point is sometimes what we call religious perfection and so on often starts beyond that. Like the Rambam would tell you something like, and Aquinas makes this comment often when he reads the ethics, Aristotle says this because he's speaking of the perfection of a human being in this world. Religion starts with perfecting human beings so that they can have the perfection that is needed, or the kind of perfection for eternal life, or for the life of the soul, which Aristotle also acknowledges sometimes in some ways, which is like for Olam Haba, for the next world. So that's out of the picture, and you should realize that when we're talking, at least in chapter 4, for example, of Shemana Prokem, very explicitly about the kind of perfection that exists in this world, which is the humankind. A human in the sense of something that lives forever is not what we call human now, although someone can say that's the true human, so on. I'm going to just move on from this, just to have this clarification. Now, just like there are beyond human things, there are also below human things, right? There are below human things, like
animal things,
or plant things, or daimon things. How do you call it daimon in English? Like
inanimate
things. Yeah, that's a negative translation, right? Daimon also, I guess.
Like it's natural things.
See, it's lushing, daimon.
Yeah,
silence.
Like silent, I guess, or unmoving. Or body things, like material things. Now, all these kind of perfections, yeah, all these kind of perfections might also be great, right? For example, this is the subject, or both of these aspects are the subject of chapter 2 in Shemayna Prokem, which you should already know backwards, because we did it for like 2 months. And in chapter 2, we discussed how human being is this, like, this very complex thing who has all these kind of parts in him. And there are also non-human perfections, non-human things in a human being, in the sense of, for example, even below that, right, you could talk about like heaviness or strength in the material sense, not in the biological sense, right? Like there are strong things like metal or bones. And human beings have some of that perfection. We need to have, your bone has to be hard in order to live and things like that. But all of that, or you could be heavy, and heaviness has some use, you know, if you want to block a door or something. You need the heaviest guy to be the bouncer or something. And those are not human perfections. Those are things that you could have used a rock for. Happens to be that humans are somewhat made out of rocks, which is what confuses people. Sometimes they see someone that's just very heavy and very big and very large, or very small, whatever. Perfection is not... This goes back to our discussion of the middle, right? The biggest thing wouldn't be perfect either. It's very easy to see why perfection is always a mean, right? But the perfect size human... Well, there's already something human because it's going to be relative to what a good human is. But it's someone that can, you know, can jump on the highest, or can be the best used as a doorpost or a door block or something like that. That is a lower than human perfection, right? And almost in the same way, most bodily perfections are like that, right? Being healthy or being strong. Like I said, being tall, all of those things are less than human perfections. They're also not what ethics is about. That's not to say that they're not important, because they're even in some sense more important, because they're more basic. You can't start anything if you're not healthy. You can't start anything if you're not the right size, and so on. But they're not the human perfections. Does that make sense? Now, what decided is not to be human? That's another discussion. But anyways, so this is another thing, and people make this mistake. This is the... like if the religious people tend to try to be too much overhuman, then the materialist, secularist people often try to be too much below human, right? And there's like the lowest common denominator, things like that. Like society should at least have everyone be healthy and happy in a material sense.
Wait,
which
so
is
you're saying the material structure of humans is not human?
Yeah, it's necessary for humans. Just like it's necessary to have...
It's part of like the evolutionary animal process. So maybe,
Or even lower than animal, like I said. Like you need minerals and stuff. They have to have the correct ratio and things like chemistry. Chemistry is not yet animals, right? Although humans need chemistry. And your chemical balance or whatever that is.
It's a combination
still not.
Of the other three.
It's a base. Yeah, the lower things are a basis. Yeah. They're a base. You're built up of them. But being perfect in those aspects doesn't really make you a good person. Now, just to give a simple definition of what we mean when we say a human good, something humanly good, someone that I have a simple way that still works, although some people are weirdos even nowadays, especially nowadays, but in general, even nowadays, the kind of things that people say at eulogies. If you go to a hesped and they praise someone, whatever kind of things we praise people for that, those are the human values, the human virtues, okay, the human goods. Is that a good criteria?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's trying to describe a life well lived. So.
Yeah, for the most part, nobody says he was so heavy, he was so well, so in shape. Even if they say in shape, they mean to say he had the virtue of like self-control, he went to the gym every day. Nobody's going to say, well, the guy was, like, he when he got into fights, he always won. Almost
pounds.
Nobody, right. That, even if, yes, it's not, it's meant that in the most human way.
Hmm?
Right.
Good work ethic is a big one.
Yeah, okay, we could say that. But
it sounds like, but really they're saying, literally.
Yeah, those things are complicated, but I'm saying in general, people still understand what things people are really praised for, although we sometimes praise people for other things, like I could praise you for having a lot of money in life, but when you're dead, usually you don't get praised for that. Like this thing that it says in the saying.
What if they say he's a good Eved Hashem?
That's the beyond, I didn't say. That's true. That's the definition. But at least for the below, it's easy to see that. I'll talk about that. I don't have an easy way out of that, but I think that's really.
In American spending, a lot of times they talk about people's passion for sports.
What?
Which I never quite understood. You always watch the Giants game.
Well, it must be because I think that that's part of being a good human being. Now, just like you said, like Eved Hashem, people who say that ultimately think that that's what a good human being is.
Yeah.
Even if they don't frame it in this way, and therefore they might make mistakes because they don't understand it that way. I think that ultimately that's what they must be thinking. And that's why I'm not so worried about that, really. People might have weird things to say because they have weird ideas of what good humans are. I mean,
the virtue of discipline is the human part. Like,
yeah,
go,
exactly.
Go
you
to
could
the
say.
Gym, that's... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could say these things, but everyone understands the difference. Like, there are some things that we praise people when they're alive for, or I don't know if we really mean to praise them.
Parent.
It's more like we flatter them. What?
Is being a good parent a human thing?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's a big one.
For sure. Is a good parent, a good friend, things like that. Those are like canonical human virtues. A good son, unless nobody's a good son. People are more good parents than good sons, but you can see how that changed. Right? Unless you go like the film, like, it was Kibbutz Av. Very few people actually have that. In any case, so these are what human virtues, things that people get praised for as people. Of course, I can praise you. I could, like, talk about how great it is to be tall. You could reach the higher shelf. It's useful. But that's not a human virtue. It's something of an animal part of the human virtue or a useful part because I need you to reach the highest shelf, but not a human virtue. And now, if you think about something very big, what of the things that are basic to this kind of praise, and here's where I get to where I wanted to get. If you will get to something that is basic to this kind of praise, or judgment, right, just to clear, damnation or the opposite of praise, the criticism or true damnation or something, would be the kind of human evils, right, things that we criticize people for in the human sense. I don't have a good case, like when do we do exactly this? On Twitter, I guess. We say who's bad. Like, I get this situation where we declare our human virtues. When do we declare our human vices? On Twitter, right?
Ours or someone else's?
Like, and just, no, someone else's, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
blame. When do we blame people?
Well,
we do it all
angry.
The time, right? Yeah, but sometimes, but I'm looking for a situation where it's obvious, like, that we don't blame you for being too tall or too thin or something like that. We do blame you for human failings, right? We do that all the time, right? What? Yeah. Okay. We don't have to wait for the guy's eulogy for this. Funny. Anyways.
People criticize your physical.
Yeah, but we understand that. Very good. But people do that. We say, oh, that's below. Like,
yeah.
That's just not being nice. That's just like kicking me, right? If you criticize my physical appearance, I would tell you, well, that's like below the belt. That's because it's not my fault, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
People do that, but we understand that to not be like a correct. There's nothing real in that. Like, I'm just fighting dirty.
Yeah.
Just like you just pushed me. Okay, you embarrassed me by saying I'm small, I'm ugly, things like that. Make sense?
Yeah, I guess there's two categories. There's physical appearance that you're not responsible for, and there's physical appearance that you are. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And if somebody falls
into physical then gets complicated.
You are responsible for,
well,
then to the extent
right.
That
so then they're criticizing your lack of discipline.
How you dress
no,
is a human
like,
thing.
Yeah, let's say,
weight,
I'm talking about the parents, like you're overweight or underweight or, I don't know. Yeah, so then we're criticizing your lack of discipline
so
or something like that.
Thing.
But we do understand very clearly the difference. We don't need to like say that people forgot about this. People didn't actually forget any of the things. We do know the difference between a human kind of blaming and a non-human kind of blaming, like a below-human kind of blaming. By the way, we could also, if you once we're, if we're using, Aristotle started like talks about like who we blame and who we praise, and sometimes people like, well, that's who they praised in ancient Athens. It's not true, and we still more or less work this way. And so it's good for us to start with normal daily life behavior of human beings. I think also beyond human, both beyond human good and beyond human evil, aren't praised in the same way or blamed in the same way. Because, for example, if you go to some read some like hagiography of some great tzaddik, and it talks about how he slept for 2 minutes a day and he ate 2 drops of lemon water a week, and the rest of his time he was just studying and helping people and so on. We're like very impressed by this, but also at some point we say, but nobody's going to emulate that, right? This is not real. This is not something that you should try at home, right? If the kid reads the book and it's like, I'm going to try to sleep 2 hours a night, say, maybe the Vilna Gaon was able to do that. It's not aspirational. It's also like there's, you can notice that it's a different, it ceases being praise and it starts being something like praise in the human sense. Like all human praise means do this, right? You should do this. And then there's like divine praise. Like how do you call it like when you praise God? We're not saying, I mean, some people will say you are, but we're saying something like, this is the description of some great being, which is great to think about, and so on, but not something to do with ethics, not something to do with how you should do, right?
And even what we're told to take away from this story tends to be something like...
Something more simple.
This, right, yeah. Try to use this as a model for something you might implement in some...
Right.
Not the way this person did.
Right, so the praise turns into the description of a higher form of being, not into the description of what is good for human beings.
And specifically inspirational and aspirational in that way.
Yeah, very good. Very good. You could like, he slept for 2 hours a night. At least you don't oversleep until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, like, it has the same form, it has the same structure, but it's not the same thing, right? Yeah, that's very good. When we say you should follow God's attributes, we say something like this, right? God gives lechem l'chol basar, he feeds everything in the universe. At least you feed your son when he asks to, you know, like, those are not the same kind of thing. They're the same kind of thing, but they're not the same thing. Something like that. It works for the opposite also, right? This is another interesting point. You could think in certain context that I'm not going to get into, but we also blame or criticize people sometimes for things that are so bad that they stop functioning as a moral blame. They start becoming the description of a monster, right? Like, without giving an example,
if you call
there's a big machlokes about this and a lot of things. There's also machlokes about the previous thing.
If you call certain evil people a monster,
mm-hmm.
or if that's worse because then you're exiting the human.
Yeah, this is not all machlokes on internet. This is all old machlokes.
Give an example.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Someone that's like a serial killer who like hunts people and eats them. We're against that guy, right? But we're not really against him even, right? He's not a good guy. But is he a bad guy? Like,
no, and you call somebody like that.
You could notice that he's not even a bad... Right, we say he's sick. We have this new word. We call him sick, right? Well, he's not really sick. He's just really evil. Like, it's not like... Maybe you could always find... I read a book. I've listened to a podcast about someone that wrote a book to claim that serial killers are just because they... The air pollution in their city or whatever. But seriously, there were 1,000 people in that city and not all of them are serial killers, right? So... There has to be something else going on. You could see that we call, right, we have this word sick, or monster is another word, or...
You're referring to the person as an animal.
Well, meaning like not human?
Yeah, this is like... it's lower than human.
It's not even a human evil anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It's not even a human evil. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because it doesn't seem to be motivated by normal passion.
Exactly.
You know, like, I hate this guy, I'm going to kill him.
I think the word Nazi is used that way.
Yeah, exactly. That's the example I didn't want to talk about because whenever you say that word, Gemini refuses to edit my video. Anyways,
Gemini are Jewish.
They're very firm on these kind of things.
Which word can't
be? That's Fox.
I don't know. We could try, but like, I was criticizing them. No, oh no. Anyways. No, seriously, it's also used, also like destroys the discussion usually when you say that. But, what?
Kismaruj.
Actually, we're in the joke. I once heard a joke like it was like a line that says someone called like your
right. We said they're animals and things like that, and these are all. Sometimes it's not true that the guy's an animal; he's just the evil person. But at least we understand that we have this category of like people that we blame. We say that they're bad, but it's like you said, you can't imagine yourself doing something like that. So again, when we blame that person, it's not functioning as don't be like that, right? It's more like this is a description of some subhuman kind of thing. Of course, don't be like that. Like, be careful. It's more like be careful of him. And we could, like, again, also if we do a Mr. Haskell, it becomes very weird. Like, yeah, like
him. Don't
that,
be like him.
That guy killed 6 million Jews. At least you don't bother your sister. Like, it doesn't really connect very well.
You have to be vigilant for that.
Right. You don't have to. Like, basically, it's not realistic. It's not Musser. It's not Musser. It's like it becomes description of weird things. So those are very good examples of...
The inverse still has the same function. You might tell somebody, don't do this because this is the same kind of thing that this person...
Yeah, exactly. Scale. It could work in the same structural way. You see how far it is from being a human kind of blame or human kind of praise. Another way, we could say this another way by saying something like both of these extremes don't belong in a city, are not part of society. Like the great tzaddik who's totally flying in the heaven all day in his mind is not living in with not one of us, in the same way as the other serial killer is not one of us. He's not living. So both the, that's why if you go in the desert, you meet two kinds of people, bandits and breslevers. Okay, now...
You're talking about like the monastic. He lives outside.
Monastic lives in the same place where the bandits live.
Yeah.
Because they're both not human. Yeah. Right? Anyways, this is another discussion. Now, but when we talked about blame and praise, you could see very easily that the thing, it's, now if I ask you like, so what is this thing? What is the criteria for what gets praised in a human way? Specifically in a human way, because that's why I need this word, in a human way. That's why I give this whole introduction. And what is the thing that is not blamed in human? Like, how do we define it? For both, what's like one definition that excludes both ends of this spectrum? Right? What is it?
Oh, what's fundamentally human?
Yeah. What is that makes the kind of things that we praise as human into human praise, and so on, and
is
vice versa.
Like the Platonic form of human.
Well, no, the Platonic form. No, part of an important ingredient, at least. I don't know if that's the form. Some, at least, I don't know if it's enough. It's not enough, maybe. But at least one of the important ingredients for a good to be a human good or an evil to be human to be a human evil is
deliberated action. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Premeditated action.
Covered by the intellect.
Right or chosen.
Very good. Some of these things, right? Do you agree? You disagree? You could make your own shot. Something like choice, intention, like you said, deliberate action, which is a long word for intention, yeah. I think.
Premeditation,
yeah. Right?
Whereas these
chosen.
Non-human people
so,
yeah.
wasn't choices?
What? Yeah, at least we don't understand the being, the Vilna Gaon as a choice. Maybe your people was born that way, maybe after doing 1,000 choices, you... that possibility opens up. It's not a normal choice, right? In the same way, I don't have a choice to be a serial killer. Not something that I choose. It's not. It's beyond choice, right? Or in the same way, that's not a good, the best example of this. Really, when we say something like, when I say you don't blame someone for having a deformed nose, it's like why? Because they didn't choose it. Well, someone chose it.
This is
sheer criticizing of Dessler's Nekudas Sabachim. To explain, but I don't have patience to get it. Just to explain why he was so confused. Now, if we'll get to the end, you'll see why he was so confused.
Outside choice for some people.
There's things, yeah, but forget about for some people.
Yeah.
Mostly for all people, right?
Yeah.
For all people, their physical appearance is mostly, not entirely, like we said, but for mostly, it's not a choice. Therefore, it's not human praise to praise someone as beautiful, although there's a problem. We do praise people as beautiful, and we think that that's somewhat good. We have to explain that, but at least morally we understand that there's nothing wrong with being ugly, right? Is it evil to be ugly? Someone that looks ugly is evil? I mean, he's making everyone uncomfortable by walking into the room.
Socrates for being
who?
Nietzsche criticized Socrates.
Yeah, but what does he want?
Well, he said that not because he was ugly, but that it affected his thought.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, that's he claims that he's compensating.
Yeah.
Which is a different fault.
Okay, so we understand this point that things unchosen. So now this is something important. Because I led you through this whole story to get to the point where we discuss choice, right? And I think that probably a better word than choice is something like you said, deliberate action, or decided action, something like that. Something that you decided or wanted.
Could have done other than
that. Maybe could have done other. I don't like that definition so much. You'll see in a second why.
Planned,
yeah. Thought about or something like that. Why
animals like maybe have plans, but they're instinctual plans, no? Like I'll collect my acorns and
discuss planning.
No? Yeah, I'm not so worried about animals at this moment. Like whenever we talk about human, what is human? I feel like a very bad way to figure that out is to read animal science books, at least the modern ones, because it's not really. But we have to understand why it seems to be wrong. But at least when I talk, give you two examples of human praise and what we don't praise humans, you understand. Like, if I praise you for being beautiful, I'm praising nature for making beautiful things. I'm not praising you as a human being. That's enough for me. And you can ask, forget about peacocks, you know, they're also beautiful. No problem. So who do you praise when you praise a peacock? Nature, whoever it is, God, who created beautiful peacocks. Not, he doesn't get praised as you're a really good peacock, right? When we praise a human for doing beautiful deeds, then we say, you're a really good human, right? You could see the difference without getting into funny complications about do monkeys have laws or things like that. Now, we get to the point that a very important ingredient, if we want to talk about human goods, ethics, virtue, we need one important criteria for this is that it should be something humanly chosen. That's what makes it human almost. I don't know if this is enough, but like I said, this is part of what makes it human, is that it be something we call chosen, or at least willed. We could think of a different way to get into this. Is this agreed? Does it make sense? Now, I want to make a very important point. And we'll see if you agree with this. And if not, that's because you didn't come to enough classes yet. No. Just saying. If not,
then well, we call good as human is ethical, right?
So wait. Now, there's something very important. You probably remember that we have, you've probably in other classes, not in this one, heard about something called, which people nowadays call Bechira, or in English, free will. Have you heard of that thing?
I've heard of that.
Yeah, people have heard of this. I never talk about it, and for a good reason. You've never heard me giving a shit about it. And usually people talk about it, and why do I never talk about it? Because I don't have Bechira. Why would I talk? No, like you have to choose to talk about it before you joke about it. No, because people, usually we talk about that in conflict, in the opposite of that would be something like being, what's the opposite of free will?
Determined.
Determines, yes. But we have this like noun called determinism, or saying you are forced by your necessity, everything, all your actions are necessitated by your circumstances, by whatever it is. You don't have free will, right? And people usually say that, well, what do people say? Why do people care about that? I don't understand why anyone cares about that. Seems to be the most useless loop you can think about in the world. Do you agree with me? If you don't, then why not? Free will. Free will seems to be the most unnecessary conversation to have about. The ones that people have, that teenagers like to have, like, do I have free will? Okay, and if you do, and if you don't, why do I don't care? What difference does it make? Do you understand something better by thinking about it? Do you understand the
can't
truth?
Whether or not you believe the theory anyways.
It seems self-refuting. Not self-refuting. It doesn't refute itself. It seems self, whichever size you pick,
you out.
It seems to self-negate the discussion. Like, in any case, this seems to be a very confusing discussion that I don't know how to have, right? Like you said, if I don't have free will, so do I have free will to have this discussion?
Free will discussion's impossible to have because once you examine the nature of the mind, you change it. So,
okay. maybe
it's
also
impossible. Like it shifts while you look at it, you know.
Okay, that'd be another problem, but it's part of the loopiness of it.
Yeah.
It seems to be very useless. People usually like to have it either for like theological reasons, like if humans have no free will, why could God punish them? Okay, I don't know, maybe God doesn't punish them. Like, where did, like, it's all predetermined. I don't know why do people do bad things for the same reason they get punished. I don't never understand why anyone would care about this question, and people seem to care about it. They like talking about it, and like, oh, but does God know what you will do? So there's predestination before that. Okay, well, nice. Also, like a puzzle that I don't understand why anyone would care about. So there's something wrong with that. Oh, everyone agrees with me that it's a weird discussion to have. Now, it's interesting. There is no free will, because if you would have had free will, some of you would have like said, no, it's a good discussion. Now, you could have just chosen to say that, right? Yeah, free will. Well, that's another weird thing with the free will discussions, that it conflicts reality. This is what Rav Dessler was worried about, and his question is correct. Like, he was a good observer of reality. He was Nebuch after like 300 years of the destruction of normal philosophy, so he didn't have any resources to talk about it normally. But like, notice that nobody has free will. This is not the one question. I want to distinguish what I care about choice, and I led you through a half hour of discussion about the human good to see why choice is very important. Oh. And now,
free will or choice?
Wait, very good. Now what I want to show you is how far choice is from free will. Choice, I'm just going to give these two names and try to stick with it, stable at least for tonight, because the words are not the main thing. But let's call this choice and that free will. Choice is very important. If something you don't have a choice about, we all agree, is either beyond or below human, it's not interesting to talk about. But free will is not that. And I want to give some reasons for why the free will discussion is a waste of time. The first one is what I just said, that it seems to be stuck in its own loop forever, and it seems to be, like, you might have arguments for both of them, but both of them seem to be self-contradictory, right? If I do, just to be very clear, both of them, not only the determinism side is in a loop, also the free will side is in a loop, right? By this very simple way that you said, if everything is determined, then it was already determined if I agree, if I believe that I have free will. And the problems of punishment are also things like that. Like, am I responsible for myself? Do I deserve anything, any reward and punishment? It also calls achnes, right? It's all part of the same loop. Whatever determines that I sin determines that the judge gives me a punishment. There's nothing to discuss. There's the same problem the other way around. You'll notice how weird free will is now, what people think is free will is. Because if there's free will, then I could also just choose to believe the arguments or not. And at every level, like, I don't know, everyone's just choosing everything. Everyone's just deciding everything by some magic thing called free will. Then discussions don't make any sense. People really think this, by the way. People are like, I can't prove you anything because that would be going against your free will. That's why God doesn't prove that he exists to anyone, because that would be going against free will. Did you hear this trickle title from anyone ever? Why didn't God leave any good proof for his existence anywhere? Because that would be going against free will.
Uh-huh.
As if you would have a... I don't
you
know.
You would have no choice, right?
Are you holding that argument?
I don't know. I'm just showing you something weird right now. Because like, either arguments prove something to everyone, but you still have to learn them. Or you have free will to negate. If free will is the kind of thing that arguments are... No, that if it's Yashme Ayin, then this is still not a problem. Right? But you think free will is, there's not a problem. You could have an argument and not believe it. Let's just move on. People seem to think this. You can have an argument and not believe in it. And if it is Yeshma, if it's not Yeshma, then it's not a problem at all. Then there's still free choice somehow, although I have an argument, right? So both sides, that whole...
Choice is the hardest
that way of
justifying.
Wait, but so that whole way of describing free will is based on this very weird thing. So that's... Just to finish, I'm not going to get into that. Maybe I'm wrong about this little thing that I got into now. But the important thing is that kind of free will seems to be an inner side you pick, stuck in a very big loop. And therefore, it makes no difference. And I don't even have a way to like start open up the discussion. It seems to be we can put down these two statements. You have free will, determined, and talk about them endlessly, but no progress seems to be ever made. As
McIntyre?
Yeah, said this is one of the frustrating things about philosophy. They
said
it's
rabbis.
It's definitely not a yid.
Right?
You know, so as Alistair Magna and other people have noticed, that this is one of the kind of things in which philosophy makes no progress. You don't even seem to understand each other better. Like, there's free will people, there's determinist people, and they just having endless word games, and there seems to be something weird. Okay. Now, another thing, another very important thing, and this is the most more important thing for me, is that it seems to me that, so we'll say, so it's practically relevant, right? For example, the Rambam seems to be very interested in something he calls Bechira, which people think means free will. I'm not sure. I think sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. We'll have to get into that another time. But the Rambam seems to be very worried. The Rambam in Hilchas Tshuva goes on at length about Tshuva, about Bechira, and the same thing in Hilchas Shmoneh Perukim and Perek Ches. And
this is a Shabbat Banu Mikalam, not Shabbat Banu without Kalamim. There was some Amim around and one of them was Beth.
So that means what?
So that means it's not free will, it's a choice.
Well, we can see. People read that in both ways. But now, right, the Rambam, for example, was interested ethically. He thought that free will is an important thing to believe for ethics to work, for tshuva to work, right?
He's trying to explain what a human is. I don't think he has, like, there are some people who seem to have this idea, like, maybe it gets back to what you were saying before, like, there's this, like, special thing called free will. It's something, whatever, and it must be true and has, like, different rules. It actually plays with different rules.
It's like a belief.
Like, you have a question that, you can believe in miracles, but God, Hashem, how can you call it a miracle and believe it? No, that, he doesn't do that. Like, why would it be different than anything else in the world? The realm is just, it's just a description of something that's important, because maybe it's a good way to describe something. It doesn't act any differently than anything else that exists. That's good.
Okay, so let me.
There have been studies that not believing in free will will reduce your discipline. You know?
But if free will doesn't exist, then that's also, you just decided for you by something else, right?
Yeah.
I get it. I mean, is there? By the way, are there such studies? Yeah. I don't believe any such studies, anyways. Don't worry. It's like psychology studies means that some guy sent out a questionnaire to 30 bored college students. Doesn't. Or nowadays, you just go on. I don't know. Does it still exist?
Mechanical surveys.
Is Mechanical Turk still a thing? You know, Mechanical Turk. We used to do surveys online. Pay a dollar. They used to. I don't know if it still works. Many of these surveys, they used to Google out a service and Amazon. You could buy surveys.
Actually, explain something. You know this happiness survey? You know the happiest.
So yeah, I get what you're saying. So but let's. I want to talk. Like, I get it. Maybe in some. I don't say it's not true. Maybe it is true. I'm just saying, like, a study is not helping me much. But I'm trying to understand how is this an important thing? Now, I want to like define something very simple. The kind of free will that you get told, like some people have even asked on the Rambam, why didn't he count the 14th Iker to believe in the free will? It seems to be very important. The Rambam, it says explicitly in it's an important principle and it's the foundation of the Torah. It's explicitly his language in the Chesuvah, but he didn't count it as like one of the things you must believe. And now that it's treated as something you must believe, because obviously, now why is it something you must believe? I have a rule, right? You know me. Anything that someone says you must believe, that means it's not true. That means he believes that it's not true, right? Because the truth doesn't have to believe then. Remember, truth is the things that stay true even when you stop believing in them. I don't believe I'm going to get tired. I get tired anyways. So that's nature. That's reality. I don't believe I'll bump into a wall if I walk straight there. I will anyways. That's called truth. Anyone sometimes says you must believe in something, usually he means to say there's something, I don't think that it's as true as you think. Okay. Of course, life is more complicated than this, but that's my joke. Now, therefore, whenever people say you must believe in free will, like, what do you mean you don't believe in free will? I'm like, I don't know, look at yourself. Do you have free will? Did you ever experience free will? Did anyone ever experience free will? I have never experienced free will. Yeah, just because I have free will, I can do it. Well, even if you do that, it comes. This is something very weird. Nobody ever. So, where did this belief in free will, like, what does it even mean? Okay, free will is like an principle. God is just, and therefore he couldn't have punished you if it would have. No problem. You know something? How do I know? I don't even know how anyone knows this. God, do we understand God's justice? Like, maybe he doesn't punish you. Maybe you come to heaven and I was like, surprise, there was no Bechira, the Baal Shem Tov was right. Whoever. Let's say, people say that. Whoever is the guy that said that. Surprise, straight to Ghana, guy, then you go, or to Ghana, because it's not free will. Who cares? Whatever. Like, you were wasting your time worrying about being a good Jew. There's no, like, maybe, who knows? How do we know any of, like, why are people so sure about things? But that's not, anyways, the important thing is, what, so, okay, if you believe in it, you don't believe in it, that's very cute, but like, did anyone ever experience it? What would it mean for free will to actually exist? The Rav Dessler was a Yid that was worried about this, and he was looking and he realized that he has this free will at the 14th cigarette of the day, if he should smoke it or not, something like that. And then came up with this whole theory to base everything we call free will on that kind of choice. But I think that he was mistaken about even that, because that's not what free will is. So let's go back to back up to where we came from, right? So we establish, everyone agrees that free will in the sense, just say it, in the sense of some kind of very abstract, very free, free in the sense of free-floating, right? Disconnected kind of act of the will, like a magic thing that not because, right? Not because of anything, and it's not free. Because and free will are the opposites, right? Causes are chains. Seder Shtalshlis is the chaining of the world, right? Shtalshlis, literally. Chain of being. No, unchained, right? The free, like, just choosing to do this or that. Now, I don't know any human being, if someone would have such moments, I would say that he's nuts. He is a sick person. He's not human. I think. I've never had such a moment in my life. And I wonder if anyone ever did. It seems to be like a very weird thing. Like, okay, let this. Now I'm just chewing freely. I don't have any moments of choosing freely. And this is what causes all people, like, do you have Bechira? Okay, so could you be a goy now? Could you, say, no, obviously not. Or maybe I theoretically could. So what does theoretically mean? So we're back in theory world. Like, theoretically means I could say things, not connected with any experience or any reality. But, like, do you have free will to not come to my Shia today? You could have been lazy and not came, but that wouldn't be an act of free will. That would just be laziness. That's not the same thing, right? That's already an excuse. Some slightly less free will, at least, right? You could have decided to come. That also wasn't free will. It was because of something, right? Because it's the best Shia in Lakewood. You have to come, like. You have to, right? Well, does it force you? That's another question. But that's still not free. Right? It seems like nobody ever experiences free will in the way that people believe that it exists. Therefore, besides Rav Dessler's theory that that's what happens at one moment of choice, I think that that's wrong, but I could talk about that separately. But in general, it's not a normal human experience to have free will.
Is this connected from narrative?
Yeah, because we'll get to that. I'll try to get that in the end. And if I don't, that's because I don't have free will. Now, you see how useless this free will is? It's just a joke that you could put anywhere. It's not even a good joke. Good jokes are the ones that you can't put anywhere.
Yeah, determinism is still in conflict with choice, right?
Yeah, but that's a nice, weird puzzle for weird people to puzzle about. Who cares? I'm interested in things
I think that both of those sides have some degree of relevance.
They're irrelevant, of course. Now, let's go back to where I came from. You remember that we came here, arrived at this discussion of choice because of something very basic, which we all agreed on, which we do experience. Unlike free will, which nobody ever experiences, this is something we do experience. We experience when we blame people, when we judge people, which, okay, you could say maybe we're just judging them based on nothing, but we also experience them in ourselves. Right? We experience some of the things we do as being more pertaining to us, more coming from me, from what I am. You'll notice that that's already something most people will not call free will. It's precisely the thing people call just your habit or something. But when you tell me some things you've done represent what you are, represent who you are, right? They come from what you are. Representation might not be the correct word, but some things, the things that are mostly me, right? What do you want people to talk about by your levaya? The things that represent what you are, you might be a stick loser that does those things only once a week. Doesn't matter. Still the things that you think represent what kind of human being you are. You might be deluding yourself and so on, but that's what you think at least, right?
What would be good and about you?
Not only what's good, of course you don't want to do the bad things, but and ideally, like, not in your levi, like in the Bezen Shalmal, whatever, you still want to have a correct narrative of what you are. And that would not include, it would include a lot of the things that people say are not free will, and will not include a lot of the things that are free will, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, right? When we say, you'll notice that this is what's important for us ethically. I'm making a point based on every human being's experience.
In the free will world, that's still possible.
Which 2 minutes right? A night?
To sleep 2 minutes a night in the free will world is possible.
Possibly possible. But when I'm saying that I praise myself, when I talk about actions that represent myself, that come from me, that are really about me, that I'm trying to become a person like that, right? That's what ethics is about, aiming to become a good person. Though the actions that include in that, the actions that count for that, are the ones that I have chosen. The ones that have something to do with what I am based on what I think I should be or based on what I already am. They're precisely not the ones that I choose freely. They're almost the opposite. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because I'm drunk around. Like things that I just chose, like take even Rav Dessler's example, okay? Let's say I'm a guy that eats and drinks and smokes and things like that. And then one time I didn't drink. Everyone agrees that that's easy, in the sense of free will. If free will means easy, like Rav Dessler seems to have thought, that I agree with him. I have that experience too. Like, nothing is stopping me from drinking this seltzer or not drinking me. There's no major, I don't even have a big fight about it. Like, I'm like, ah, should I drink it? Should I not drink it? That's already a complicated case. I just put it down to pick it up. No problem. That's free will. We get to call that free will. But that's really something less than free will, something less than choice, right? It's not a, not even choice. If I'd sat down and I made myself a plan, I want to reduce my intake of seltzer, therefore I'm going to every night drink one less cup, and I follow through on my plan, then that represents who I am. That's something that is about me in the kind, in the sense of what it talks about, represents what I am, who I am. If I, and that's precisely what Rav Dessler called, unfortunately, not free will, because that's just some habit that you have or some plan that you made or something like that. The act of me taking the cup or not taking the cup, that follows from that. What makes that an important thing to me, a human thing to me, is precisely what is before the moment that he called the moment of free choice. It's precisely the thing where I thought about it, I deliberated about it, I maybe even created myself a habit to do that way, I made myself into the person that does that, and now I'm doing it because I'm that kind of person, because I chose to be that kind of person. That's what choice means. That's what the kind of things that count for telling you who you are, which is what we're interested in here now, are those things. Does this make sense? Understand what I'm saying? What I'm trying to say is that if we forget about free will in the abstract sense, like justifying God or anything, and we talk about why is it important to us ethically to talk about something like choice, and we understand it very obvious. Because, for example, oinus, like the biggest example, if someone just used you as a rack and threw you onto someone else, you didn't do that at all. You did that, you were functioning as a tool of someone else. That's not me. It doesn't say anything about me, right? It says something about that guy. It doesn't have nothing about me, right? And then there are more complicated cases where I made an accident, and that represents something about me, more like that I'm not a careful person, if the accident was somewhat my fault, but it still doesn't represent me in the most important sense, right? And then I can talk about something that I do just like out of unthinking, something like, I just passed by, just did it. I think that Rav Dessler's example is really that. Something that I did, like, in halacha, it's called something like a misasik. I just did it without thinking. People do things without thinking all day. Right? I ate three candies, not two candies. Not because I have a diet that we eat three candies. That's not saying anything about me. Why is it not saying anything about me? Because I didn't choose it. Like you said, it wasn't premeditated. It's not something about me. In some sense, you could say he every day eats three candies, then it becomes something about me, because there's some meanness, some have some habit, they have some character that eats a lot of candies. That's something about me. But if it's something done just carelessly, that's not something about me. What's the primary case of something that says something about me? Which is what we care about when we say choice. We don't care about some abstractness. We care about what represents what the person is, what is about, what comes from him. It's precisely those things which we've thought about or which we've trained ourselves to be, right? You say someone, just like in the physical case, right? Someone who trains himself to be a good runner, and now he's a good runner, we praise him for that, right? Let's say, forget about my previous ethical problems, right? I'm just using this as an example because it's easy to see. We praise him for being a good runner, right? He wins the Olympics. And why does he win the Olympics? Obviously, we don't say, well, you don't deserve it, you just trained well. And now when you're running, you're winning the race, that just follows automatically from you training well. Well, that's exactly what we're looking for. Someone that trains well, it's the opposite. Someone that just takes drugs and doesn't train well, we say, yeah, that doesn't count. There was not enough human choice in that. You just took a drug. You used a mechanical way to get yourself to win. You cheated, right? Why is that cheating? What's wrong with cheating? Very nice. If the game would be about, right, everyone agrees for some reason that drugging at games is bad, unless someone already invented new Olympics, which is just the drugging Olympics. But that would be a different Olympics. But the regular Olympics is the one where we reward a kind of human endurance, human training, right? And nobody says, well, he's just trained that way. Yeah, it's the opposite. Someone who didn't train and just like made a choice. If someone comes to the Olympics and says, how did you win? I used my free will. Even if that would be possible, which is not, we would still disqualify him. Because we say, well, this is not a game of people that use their free will. This is a game of people that actually train and become the kind of person that are an athlete that can win at the Olympic Games. So you understand something very simple and very obvious, although it's not obvious to you before you came to my class, that there's a case where the Aristotelian or normal people way of thinking is in precise contradiction to what the nowadays free will people say. Because real people say, Rav Dessel says this explicitly, right? Or Rav Tanya says this also, actually, and he's also confused. And this is part of his whole confusion. What do you get tzchar on, right? What you get tzchar on is, as we discussed last time we had a class, not a report about what goes on in heaven. It's really about human judgments of the good, right? What do you get tzchar for? So there's many contemporary modern books that say you don't get tzchar for things you do out of habit, because that's just the habit doing it. You only get tzchar for the moment of overcoming, for the one, the Tanya says, for the one more time that you learned that you were not habituated to, that's what you get tzchar for. That is what the conclusion of the free will, that non-existent free will, gives you. Or the Fumtzad Agra theory, we won't get into that. It's connected, those two things. We'll get to chapter 6 and discuss that in that context. What Arista, what a normal person says, is precisely the opposite. What you get the most praise for, the most chan for, is the things that you already do because that's what you are. That you don't have to choose yourself every day. You don't have to free will yourself into, if there's even such a thing as free will, which there isn't, in that sense. Or the person we praise as being a great thinker or a great helper is precisely the person who has chosen. Of course, it starts from choice somewhere, and this gets us into the discussion of to where we are. This is really why it's an introduction to where we are, which is how you get into, how you become a good person, how you get a good character. That doesn't happen by itself either. But the person that we praise mostly is the person who does have that good character. And of course, it's not just because he started once to have the good character that gets chosen. The thing that we praise, the thing that gets had, is precisely to be a good person, who is the kind of person that chooses. And that's the kind of actions that we ascribe mostly to the human Shabbat, to the person doing that as the kind of human being that he are, that represents who we are. That's what we give him a hesped for. We don't give a hesped, you know, I know that he was, because by the way, if there would be such a hesped, then most people would be very bad. Like, you know, usually he was a good guy, but really we shouldn't talk about that. That was just how his habit. The one time he really bothered someone, and therefore he goes to Gehenna forever. Right? That follows also. No, that doesn't work like that, right? Because that's like a mistake. A mistake is less willing, right? Maybe he should have not made that mistake, so he'll get some punishment for it. But that's just a mistake. We disqualify mistakes from what represents character, right? So, this is the very important conclusion. Choice just means what a person, what comes from you as the you, as the person.
It's like a moment in time. It's not like a...
No, choice is not a moment in time. Choice, I mean, the action from choices is something from a moment in time. But the choice is something that takes more than a second, the opposite. Choice is something that has to, if it takes less than just a second, then it's not choice. Then it's carelessness. Of course, many actions take less than a second, and therefore they come automatic from your habit, or just carelessly, or from some tava that you had, and things like that. There's many reasons why people do actions that take a second. But choice is precisely the thing that it's a long-term process. Now, since we don't live in long-term, we have to get into how it actually works and all the level, all the stages of that process. But when we praise someone and we say the things we praise are the things that were chosen, we don't mean the things that he sat now and chose. Because that's also not thing that something that happens. What does happen is that you decide to do a long-term thing and you don't decide. It's not something, by the way, it's also not something that you decide. That's why the Baal HaMusar are totally confused. For example, when they talk about Achlatas or Kabbalas, right? That's just not how human beings function. Nobody, I mean, again, like this goes back to my discussion last time about goals. Human beings don't function like I came by Yom Kippur and I decided I'm going to be good and I became good. It's a law of Ed. You got to do something different than that. Never works. How do I know it never works? There's so many books written about how to do it well. Now, and this doesn't work. What works? Creating habits. Those are things that work. How do you create habits? Yes, from very simple things that are easy. I didn't say that that's not how it works, but not from like decisions. Decisions are, in the sense of the momentary sense, are totally overrated. They might sometimes happen in like emergency cases, but they're not how things. Choice means like, I chose to go to this yeshiva, and that's a primary example of choice would be something like, I chose to go to this yeshiva, and therefore I became a Talmid Chacham. What we're praising is not the moment that he sat, like he had maybe a lot of the conversations deciding where to go and what to do, but then he did it, and then he did the whole thing out of choice, and that's why he's, you know, he's a student of that yeshiva. That's the kind of guy he is. It's a chosen thing. It's not like, well, you went to yeshiva, yeah, but I chose to go to the yeshiva. It's not like someone forced you. It doesn't make a big difference, by the way. Even if your father forced you to go there, still, that's who formed your character, and that's what you are. It's more of a chosen thing than the thing that you choose in a moment, and it just moves on. Does that make sense? More helpful? That's my main...
I'm not sure why we're like... I don't know what's being added over things that we've spoken about previously. That's all, like the word choice. I don't know what's adding.
That's the word choice, there's more things to add, but this is the one thing.
Saying, but yeah.
Well, we added the negation.
I hear the distinction from this and what people consider free will. I hear that. But yeah. This is just like things we've discussed before. Like,
I'm not more Chiddush.
I think you are making one.
There's more to talk about what choice is precisely, but I have to finish it for the 1 hour.
This whole thing would work that, like what the Rambam says with the middle ground, right? That only comes through
training.
Through training, right? Whereas somebody could be born with, let's say, only being on the giving end of things.
And training, in the sense, is not an aggregation of decisions, right?
Well, it somewhat is. But that's a practical way of how to get it. Like what we call chase in that.
From habit.
It's more complicated. I have to talk more about
this. The inertia is what I don't understand.
Tanya, right? The way he says that, it's the opposite. It's not the thing that you always do, right? It's the thing that you do once.
All right, I said the opposite. The thing that you always do is the things that you choose.
That's right. So that is
because you have more kavana in those things. A long-term kavana.
Right.
Not a momentary kavana.
So
this
that,
is also
get so
the inertia
only
for
work
that
with
is,
the middle ground.
Inertia, there's some inertia in that, but why is that a problem? No. Why can't it could work with the middle ground?
Does that process start from an acute
maybe
style
because
only
a person the Rambam says, right? A person can be born being a totally giving person all the time, right?
You could so be born like that?
So he's always like that. Right?
Well, you people are born in extremes?
Right, yeah.
I don't know if that's what he said.
No, doesn't he say
not
that?
Sure.
No,
I know what you mean. Yeah, no, I'm not sure. I don't think I'm not
some
sure.
People,
it's true that that's something. I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
All dispositions are
not
are
sure.
Acquired?
Yeah, there's a different problem. Yeah, I know. It's a different problem. But I don't know. Yeah, it is true that it's the middle ground, the middle way requires being the kind of person. I agree with that. Yeah. It requires being a kind of person that knows how to act in a certain, relative to a certain area in a certain, the correct way. It's not something that you can do. I agree with that, yeah. And what you said about being born, I don't agree with, but I agree with it.
But
it's more complicated.
That trajectory, right? Which
yeah.
is a
I know what you mean. I know the language. I understand what you're talking about, but I'm not going to solve it by looking at the language. There's probably more problems about this. Yeah.
But to embark on such a habit-forming process or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that begin?
Yeah, it begins. It must also begin by the same kind of deliberation. We have to talk more, like Ali says, Lozi, the guy, whatever you want to call it, called about it precisely what choice is. What I gave you was just why character is what we call choice. More of what we call choice than the momentary kind of choice that people identify with free will. That is very important. I think it's a clarification that I didn't know before I made this year. So I don't know how you would have known it. Maybe you did. Because it's implied in other ones. That's the whole use of it. That choice, what makes is more, character is closer to choice than the momentary choices that people identify with free will. And that's some kind of choice that actually exists. If you want to get into a bunch of things like how do we actually gain character, how do we actually get a certain character, we're exactly the choice in that. That's something we have to clarify more about the process of it. Also things that we know already, but we can clarify them more. And we're exactly what we call choice and there's not this, Aristotle distinguishes between choice and wish and will and a whole bunch of other things, opinion, all these things are different. They're not we have to.
Right, and I understand this distinction of choice as being something that represents your humanity, but embarking on that is still, that's still where I'm stuck. And it's where I'm stuck even, not even just in thought, but even in action, right? There's all sorts of things I think that we want to do,
mm-hmm.
right, that I'd like to do, or that I think I'd like to do, I'd pretend I'd like to do.
You wish to be that person, but you don't do want.
Right, right. I don't have those habits. Just habits that I want to have.
Right. Right, those are wishes.
Right, maybe what's between me and that is knowing, but even to decide to know is, not to decide to know, even to begin knowing seems to be its own choice.
Yeah, it could be.
So well, choice
doesn't
mean regression problem. The same kind of regression problem.
Yeah, there's a regression problem in the whole theory, and he's very happy with it. Like it's a circular, and that's how it's supposed to be.
Okay.
You choose because of what you are, and what you are because you do the actions that makes you what you are, and there's a whole cycle. And therefore, one of the conclusions here is that training, that education, is what determines what kind of person you'll be, and there's no way out of that. That's Plato. Aristotle quotes Plato, like Plato and Aristotle both say things like this. That the conclusion from this is that there's no fix for someone who had a bad education, or at least no very good fix, because that's where things start. Now, who was the first guy? That's a good question. How did your great 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 grandfather start his good or bad education? That's why we need prophecy. This is for Schneeberton to explain.
Why do we need prophecy?
To start the cycle of, like, how did anyone decide to be a good person? It is a true argument for Torah Minashmah. I'm serious about this,
like,
by the way.
Rav Sadia kind of says, like, it's a jump start.
Right? Well, no, Rav Sadia says that it's a jump start. I'm making it even worse. Rav Sadia says that we could have arrived at the truth by... Because Rav Sadia is, unlike the Rambam, for example, if this Rambam explicitly disagrees with him in Perek Vav, Rav Sadia believes in some kind of moral intuition, which just shows us what the good is. It's not clear that Aristotle or the Rambam believe in that. They believe that there might be ways to find out truth, but there probably have less ways to find out the good. And therefore, we need prophecy. So not like prophecy is the... that's like, unlike Rav Sadia, which says this is what prophecy is useful for, what I was saying is that that's what it's needed for.
This is still not right.
Well, not, you don't have to have word prophecy, some kind of like jump, sorry, like
well,
a beginning point of revelation.
Nature, then it works. It works better.
It doesn't matter. There still needs to be some beginning point. If we agree that our beginning point is usually our education, and then this has to go back to the first educator, and this is why. Just forget about this as a philosophical argument. This is why cultures have stories of the first lawgiver. Every culture has that.
Solon of Athens.
Yeah, Solon gave the laws to Athens, and Moses gave the laws to the Jews, and some other guy gave the laws to the to the Romans, whatever. I forgot his name, and so on. Right? And why do we say this? Because we believe that it's at least very hard. It stopped recording. It's at least very hard for a human being to discover the good. We need some. It's needed to start
you
somewhere.
Be good for that. You need to be good already to get discovered. Good,
yeah, right. For truth, there might be ways out, but for good, it seems very difficult. Unless you're a Socratic, that's at least that you could discover the good by inquiry somehow.
Well, by
inquiring.
So this is a question.
Maybe that's back to
the
question.
Conscience,
yeah.
A purely.
I just said this.
Or is it somewhat reliable?
Yeah, the Rambam is a lot more on the side that it's conditioned.
Well, you need education to go this way, even though you can figure out.
Yeah, but this is not the question,
right?
The problem that you have. This is just
the regression problem. No, but it solves a separate study that we had about the ability to know the good from knowing what something is, and the requirements for moral education as a prerequisite for that.
Well, because you don't know what you are either.
Right. What I'm saying is, if I would understand the truth of what I am,
yeah, it's possible.
Then I would
that
know the good, right? The problem is for me to know the truth of what I am. I need to start this cycle somewhere, which requires education, right?
Well, no, that's a problem. What you're raising is a problem, I think.
I think
in other words, if there's
it solves the problem.
If there's a good argument, if there's a really good argument for ethics, if teleology, whatever it would be, a really good argument, then you can make bad people good by the argument. This is what Socrates believes.
Right.
This is the question: if the good can be taught, but it seems like. All that talk about the need for education is saying that this is not really correct.
No, but even if
at least not in
taught,
practice.
You might need to be good in order to be taught.
No, because everyone could recognize arguments, even the slave in the Mino. Everyone could recognize arguments.
The slave in Mino with the whole geometry thing?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not an argument for why your soul already has it, so it's opposite.
Yeah, but
they
hold that mitzvah she'aseichem mechayev implies that...
That's what Rav Sadia holds.
That
what
you
was
don't
them.
Need
Rav Sadia holds that. Rav Sadia holds that. Rambam doesn't agree.
Rambam doesn't use that language?
No, explicitly.
Who else uses this language?
Rav Sadia... The Rambam...
It's a very common phrase, no?
Mitzvah sechlis is Rav Sadia. Rav Sadia came up with it, and Rambam explicitly criticizes him for this.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Because... Yeah,
in
the mirror? Also here, in Shmoneh Perakim, later. This is only the fourth chapter. He explicitly criticized him for this. And this
Shmoneh Perakim, I don't remember that part.
Yeah, he said the reason for his... Where's the full one? The reason for his criticism is because he thinks that the things that Rav Sadia calls mitzvah sechlis are not. They're something of which there's no sechel, really.
Like what?
They're about the good. And the Rambam, in many times, works with the assumption...
About political good, meaning?
Yeah. That political good is not knowable, and not knowable in the same way as it's not provable in the same way as like science and philosophy.
It's not by demonstration.
because not killing and so on, like basic morals, are not really, according to the Rambam, are not strictly demonstrable. There's no demonstration for that. This is something that Aristotle says sometimes also, and it contradicts the point that where there are arguments, like the function argument and things like that, and this is a problem. Okay, anyways, I've just... Why am I still going here?